Religion on the Line, 2 hours of exploration into the world of spirituality. Whether it's the basics of faith or the hot button issues of the day, talk about it now, 576-7710. And now, Religion on the Line.
Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line here at KCMO Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 FM. Here on your radio dial in the air, thank you for allowing us to be part of your Sunday morning as we engage in conversation about spirituality, religion, ethics, and the like. We've been talking a lot this morning about death and dying, burial practices, and the like. All stimulated by the passing of the legendary figure, Muhammad Ali. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Deacon Jim Lavin from Holy Spirit Catholic Church in Overland Park, along with
Imam Bilal Muhammad, Imam Emeritus, Alan Shear Islamic Center, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
And we have been talking with Summer, and we're going to go back to her. Summer.
Hi. Yes, good morning. So just to kind of recapture the initial questions that were sparked from the topic, my father was around the same age as Muhammad Ali. He had 9 children, just like Muhammad Ali. My father's side was African-American, but as I grew interested in the historical value of my family, I looked into the religious aspect as well as even genetics. I found out that my family comes from the Arabian Peninsula towards Qatar. So then I was thinking, okay, were they Islamic and were they forced away from Hebrew faith? Because I did see also that we came from an area and a tribe that would have been connected back to what I've been told is a Levitical priesthood connected to even Joseph and Judah. So, you know, all these things are going through my mind and questioning. Coming from I grew up for 18 years with my mother's side of the family being Protestant. So with my brother dying in 2007 from cancer and him being cremated, I started questioning a lot because, you know, you're young, you're being told these certain things, you're indoctrined to believe. You don't question is how I grew up. You don't question authority or the people in your family as to your faith. But I did. I did question because my brother was young, and you're thinking, how does someone at 26 die of cancer? And he was Protestant as well. So another question that I would spark from your guys' topic is Yeshua, and I think it is Luke. He is resurrecting from the dead Lazarus. Well, we know based on the Torah that someone that would be in a Levitical priesthood should not or could not come in contact with the dead other than their family. And so seeing that my brother, I've been into different, I guess it would be different forms of funerals, and I'm thinking, well, if my family was Levitical, based on the genetic DNA tests that I've done, I'm coming in contact with the dead, and then you're thinking about the Para Adama, and you're wondering, you know, where are we in America, how do we come to terms with the different changes of faith throughout the years and different terms that we use to understand our faith, like the difference between Jesus and Yeshua, or the fact that would he have really come to, if he was a Torah observant, which we know Yeshua should have been, Torah observant, would he have touched all of these dead to bring them back to life if they were not his family?
You know, I'm going to answer from a Protestant perspective. Number one, there's no way we can know. And there is no definitive way that we can interpret Scripture, look at the history that are extra-biblical sources, Josephus or anybody else, that we can definitely know. It is impossible to finally arrive at an answer to your question. We can make conjectures, and the conjectures, by the way, the story of Lazarus is in John's Gospel. Okay. And not Luke, but
okay.
And that context.
And Jesus doesn't touch him; he just calls him.
He just calls him out. Yeah, he doesn't touch him at all.
Okay, but what about the ones that were having these illnesses that would have taken the power of?
By the way, Messiah? I don't think there's one instance where he touches, but he does use his healing powers to call forth people to new life and to raise them up. Jairus' daughter, who was dead or who certainly appeared to be dead, and he used his powers to raise the dead.
What about the woman that touched his garment, that power left him, and her illness took power from him? Would that have made him unclean? I mean, these are the questions that come about.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jesus, in many cases, he violates normal Sabbath practices, traditions, and so-called laws. He almost always sides with doing good and doing something that is of a healing nature. The woman, was he unclean? By a technical definition, yes. But I think I would suggest the more important part in that context is he says, if everyone had faith such as this one, we would be in much better shape as a whole, and commends her for having faith.
You can get simpler here, folks. There's no tradition that says Jesus was of any connection to the priestly tradition. He goes through the Davidic line.
Well, we do see the Davidic line.
We're going down a rabbit hole here.
It's a very steep hill.
Summer, wait. History is not your destiny. Biology is not your destiny. You shape your destiny informed by all that has gone before, whether it's your own particular DNA genetic code test or otherwise. We invent ourselves based on the information we have.
I'm hearing
you suggest there's got to be some ancient truth that I now must affirm because this DNA genetic screening revealed Q. That's not the case. What it reveals is a fascinating journey to get to the moment that you now help create you.
But wouldn't that be more of imagination rather than reality?
Reality is what you determine to embrace.
That would be universalism, and then you wouldn't have any foundations or structure.
Not this is an objective truth outside of myself, which is what I hear you somehow suggesting.
Well, I mean, if we're going to think that history, because you said it's formulated on things that are prior, things that have happened prior, if we can't have something that would be a historical truth, and we can't take the text that we have...
You know what? We can't have something that is a historical truth. We can have what historians suggest may be the case. Josephus, for example, is reliable, not reliable. Is he describing things correctly? We can't know.
So then how do we know what truth is, or we just told it by...
We tease it out.
Not history.
We tease it out with fear and trembling, to quote a scripture, by the way.
That would be through faith, but that is for the Protestant and Catholic belief system. What about the Judaic as well as the Islamic belief system? There's more fundamental aspects of truth because they're going off of actual texts that they believe to be true for over centuries.
Do you want to get... We don't get into a contest of which one is right. We don't do that on this show.
It's not about what's right, but what is true. That's what should be more important.
Yeah, and what we're saying is... You can get to some aspects, you can't get to... Mystery will not be pinned down like a butterfly on a mat.
Okay, would this just be a theological and philosophical disposition that never has an ending? It just goes back to just discussions that are universal?
You're stuck in the subjectivity of your own body, absolutely. When you leave it, then maybe there'll be some objective reality that correlates for all. But at the moment, we are all stuck where we are, and you either embrace it or you don't. But truth does not have to be univocal. It can be multiple. That's the part where we're really at. I think at
and
great
that's really what universalism is. It's a new wave of tapping into.
It's not a new way at all. It's not. All you got to do is read that Hebrew Bible that you think you know and realize that there are people of a variety of streams that have a relationship to the Holy One.
Yeah,
just us.
By the way, let me just put some. Is it objective? I don't think so. Is it very powerful? Yes, I do believe it is. There's a book.
There'll be macro and micro. It should be both cosmic as well as personal. You should be able to balance between the two.
That's what we're trying to do.
That's God's stuff, not yours.
But we do do that, Michael. But we don't think that you can finally come down to a definitive, this is absolutely it, and if you don't believe it, you're wrong. We don't go there, Summer. What I was going to say is, Fred Craddock and three other authors wrote a book called Speaking of Dying, Recovering the Church's Voice in the Face of Death. Because Fred, it's got Fred Craddock's name on it, by the way, I think it's universally recommendable. And because he's a great preacher and a great theologian and an extraordinary person of faith. And I want to recommend that book to not only pastors, but also to lay people as well. We thank you for your call, Summer.
I do have one final question.
We're going to take it after a break, and we're going to do it really quick. We're not going to go on and on about this. We'll be right back. We're going to take a break after these messages here at Religion on the Line.
Visit OverheadDoorKansasCity.com or call 816-512-1512.
Tune in Monday mornings as KCMO Talk Radio teams up with Operation Homefront to honor a hometown hero. While deployed, military families may sometimes struggle, and together we can help. Brought to you by Labor's Local 319. Get details at KCMOTalkRadio.com.
Carson in the Morning.
If Rob Carson says that I support you, I mean, that's priceless. I mean, honestly, it's do or die. You don't kiss the ring of the old Carsoni here, you're done.
Are you sure it's not the kiss of death?
Yes.
I mean, I've known you for such a short amount of time.
Poison lipstick, yes.
Everybody you've supported, they go away. They actually flame out in like spectacular
Scott
fashion.
Walker will come back someday.
I mean, just since I've known you, you were originally Scott Walker. I love this guy.
Oh, yeah.
There went his campaign.
Oh, boy, I sure like that Carly Fiorina, man. Oh God.
Took it all back and shot it.
Oh, Marco Rubio.
I loved Marco for a while.
I went to his rally. I guess I'll vote for Ted Cruz then. I mean, what the heck? Yeah, go ahead. Oh, no. Oh, he's all over me now. Oh, my God. Give me a towel. I think I got something into my mouth here when he blew up.
Carson in the Morning, weekday morning, 6 to 10. Carson in the Morning.
A streetcar staffer noticed smoke coming from the ground near a construction site on Main and 20th Street. The poles holding up overhead wires that power the streetcar are also right next to the construction, and they touched the pole, and it was a little warm to the touch. That happened to my first-generation iPod. Not kidding. Had it plugged in on the floor, and it literally melted the carpet under the first-generation iPod.
Really?
Yeah.
My laptop gets very hot, actually. I noticed that. I was watching a TV show on it the other day, and I had it sitting on my belly, and I didn't have a shirt on. Late at night.
Yeah.
Watching something before
bed. Sure, you didn't have it on your lap?
No, I didn't.
It's a laptop, man.
It was on my belly because I was in a laying position. And I was watching. And I realized as I tell the story on the radio that it sounds like I was looking at something lewd and lascivious. I was not.
Freeze up your hands.
I was watching a rerun of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Thank you very much.
Carson in the Morning, weekday morning, 6 to 10. Carson in the Morning.
Sleepless in Seattle was on TV about 10 days ago or so.
Yeah.
And I would be lying to you if I said that I did not watch 25 minutes of it.
Oh.
It's not bad.
Oh, no.
I know you think that I'm only into a certain type of movie.
That movie is terrible.
No.
Oh, it's awful.
No.
Oh, dear God.
No.
There are some chick flicks that are good.
That one's good.
Is sappy, awful.
That's no. I think you're confusing Sleepless in Seattle with, like, You've Got Mail. I mean, once Sleepless in Seattle was a hit, they decided to put Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan in numerous other movies that basically had the exact same plot.
Yeah.
Right? You've Got Mail was terrible.
Yeah.
Sleepless in Seattle was good, though.
See, Harry Met Sally is a great movie.
Yeah, that one's good. Real good.
Sleepless in Seattle, I just thought was Tom Hanks being coy and cute and the kid egging him on. It just, bleh. It's very saccharine.
I can't believe that this is the riff. This might be the riff that tears our duo apart.
Carson in the Morning. Weekday morning, 6 to 10. Carson in the Morning.
Bernie Sanders says Oregon in a very weird and wonderful way.
Okay.
We just won Oregon.
Oregon? Isn't Oregon a city-state in Lord of the Rings? Isn't it? We're going to take Oregon. Hey, who's with me? Huzzah! Yeah, I think it is, from Lord of the Rings.
I didn't watch it.
Okay.
Not really my thing.
Could be, what is it, Game of Thrones? Could be in Game of Thrones.
Guys in dresses chasing dragons. Yeah. Not my bag.
Not my bag.
Carson in the Morning, weekday morning 6 to 10. Kansas City's most stimulating talk.
Why don't you talk into the microphone? I got a backup mic right here. Check, 1, 2. Testing, testing.
KCMO, Kansas City. KCMO. Traffic and weather together first on the Fours on KCMO.
Good morning. You've got religion on the line. KCMO Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 FM. This is the time, this is the place. Do give us a call, 576-7710. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Deacon Jim Lavin from Holy Spirit Catholic Church in Overland Park. Along with
Imam Bilal Muhammad, Imam Emeritus, Alan Shear Islamic Center. Along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
And that was Izzy, the Hawaiian who put together Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And now I have, and What a Wonderful World, a great compilation, mixed jam.
Showing off that you actually knew one, huh?
No, I knew one. I didn't know any of the other ones. Couldn't identify them at all. By the way, I'm going to be leaving at the bottom of the hour to go to a preaching engagement, and, but grateful, especially on this day that, on the weekend when Muhammad Ali has passed, that Bilal Muhammad is here, and we've been talking with Summer.
Yeah.
Summer, before you leave, I'd love to hear what you think about Muhammad Ali before we go off, but go ahead with your question.
Well, to start it, or end it rather, with Muhammad Ali, and a thought was he understood a truth of who he was through Islam and to try to capture who he was in the culture of an American society. He was put into jail for almost 5 years for going against his belief system and sticking to it. He was able to be free. John 8:32 says that you will know the truth and it shall set you free. My final question would be, why are we subjugating, or rather, why are we teaching the masses to have a universal idea of peace whenever it doesn't allow us to have a firm, solid foundation of who we are if we're going to accept all these different truths and not have fundamental truth that will keep us firm in who we are and what we believe in respect to religion and death and living? How are we supposed to live a life if we're accepting everything as truth just to have peace? Because Jeremiah says they will say peace, but there isn't any.
Okay, Summer, that sounded much less like a question than a declaration, and so you made your declaration. We'll give you our responses very quickly and then say goodbye.
Okay. Declaration of Independence, I suppose.
I think that probably you're not going to be satisfied. We've already said it in several ways. You proof text a bunch of scriptures there, and
this one, John 8:32.
Yeah, it doesn't help.
You don't
want to
really have a conversation, do you?
Yeah, it's not a conversation. You mean you're just spouting off, and I hate to denigrate what you've suggested. I think the Bible, it sounds like the Bible is very important to you, and these are very important guides for you, but they're not important for Bilal. Bilal follows the Quran, and there are truths in the Quran that resonate, by the way, I believe, with the New Testament. If you want to condemn that, if you want to condemn that, and say,
never did I say anything condemnating. In fact, there's many truths that can come from the Quran because it's following a text that comes from Abrahamic. I've already stated that an Abrahamic tradition. There's truths in Abrahamic tradition that includes the Ishmaelites, allowing them to have a part of.
Let me ask you: are you a Christian?
No, I'm not. Actually, looking into from people passing away. and finding out that the people that have taught me through a Protestant mindset, no, I am not a Christian any longer. I do believe in Yeshua as my Mashiach.
Are you a part of the group that would call themselves Jews?
What group are you?
I actually can't even delineate a specific group because of all the things that have been taught.
Is there a community that you belong to?
I don't. That's what's sad, because when you're reading the text and you're finding out how people
believe. As near as I can tell from this conversation, the group you belong to is the group that says there is only one truth, and we, as human beings, can know what it is definitively, and I don't know of any such group that would exist in
and
that
it's called
fashion.
A group that knows that the Creator is going to have a relationship with them.
As opposed to my conviction that there are that the truth is
many
the
ways,
God,
I get what
and,
you're saying.
Mind,
you're saying a New
mind.
Age concept that
no,
without
we're not.
Everyone.
No, we're not. Summer, respect us. We've respected you. We're going to say goodbye. Bye. We're going to, you know, you've interrupted us, and we don't... We try to have a conversation, and that was not a conversation. There was an attempt to correct, and that's not the best way to go into any kind of a dialogue. That's not a dialogue. It's just competing diatribes, and we don't like to get into diatribes ourselves. Michael, I'm sorry I didn't cut that off earlier, but we finally got to it, and... we had been talking during the break that we wondered what community she was from, and sorry that we had to say goodbye, Summer, but we will hold you in prayer, and we'll hope for the best for you. Also, one of the things that you've heard on Religion on the Line over the years is that we believe that you do best your faith from the context of a community of faith. That was what part of what Michael, you were about to say something before she...
Nah, it's not important anymore.
Really, yeah, but it is important for other people to hear about communities of faith.
I've lost it. It's so problematic to be dealing with someone who's, I guess I'll call it a worldview or a certainty that is beyond our capacity. And that's why we actually do need communities, so that we can nurture each other in our conviction and our doubt. Whereas I thought I heard some are absolutely embracing there's got to be an end to doubt.
I think that she believes she's found it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep. And by the way, doubt is useful for faith. By the way, right. Doubt is exemplified in the life of Jesus of Nazareth for Christians, but for God's sake.
for God's sake, so to speak.
it really is an exceedingly fine line that we often walk. We're going to have we've got another caller here, and we'll try to get them on immediately. And we've got Charlie, you've got Religion on the Line.
I missed out on some of the conversation, but Rabbi Zedek mentioned the history and the fact that we can't really prove what happened in the past until we get to modern times where we have records to verify. So a lot of the religions are espousing and proving, they think, a negative. In other words, they affirm that the past is fact, and they base their conclusions. I'm in the dilemma where I can't...
Could I interrupt? And forgive me for interrupting. I really do ask your forgiveness, because I know Bob has to go. The past is guiding. The tradition is guiding. It is not... there automatically that this is fact. It is a guidance for us. It's a teaching for us.
Charlie, can you hold on through the break a little bit?
Well, I just want to say I can't talk about religion, my son, because he thinks religion is history.
Okay.
Well,
you know, your perspective is important. Hold on through the break, and we'll come back to you, okay? Hold on. Okay, this has been Religion on the Line. Call us at 576-7710. We'll be right back after these messages.
Carson in the Morning.
Sleepless in Seattle was on TV about 10 days ago or so.
Yeah.
And I would be lying to you if I said that I did not watch 25 minutes of it.
Oh,
it's not bad.
Oh, no.
I know you think that I'm only into a certain type of movie.
That movie is terrible.
No.
Oh, it's awful.
No.
Oh, dear God.
No.
There are some chick flicks that are good.
That one's good.
Sappy, awful.
That's, no. I think you're confusing Sleepless in Seattle with, like, You've Got Mail. I mean, once Sleepless in Seattle was a hit, they decided to put Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan in numerous other movies that basically had the exact same plot.
Yeah.
Right? You've Got Mail was terrible.
Yeah.
Sleepless in Seattle was good, though.
See, Harry Met Sally is a great movie.
Yeah, that one's good. Real good.
Sleepless in Seattle, I just thought, was Tom Hanks being coy and cute and the kid egging him on. It just, bleh. It's very saccharine.
I can't believe that this is the riff. This might be the riff that tears our duo apart.
Carson in the Morning, weekday morning 6 to 10.
CBS News Special Report, the final moments of Muhammad Ali.
Ali's family flew to Phoenix on Friday to be by his bedside. His close friend John Ramsey was also at the hospital.
A lot of emotion. These kids, like their father, they're spiritual. They had a lot of good stories. There were tears, there were hugs, there were laughs. It was good to see, you know, everybody in one room.
At that point, Ali was on a ventilator, and his organs were shutting down.
That's CBS's Carter Evans, basketball player LeBron James.
He is the greatest of all time, and he was the greatest of all time because of what he did outside of the ring. Obviously, we knew how great of a boxer he was, but I think that was only 20% of what made him as great as he was.
He says Ali broke down barriers as a member of the civil rights movement. He was a conscientious objector to the Vietnam War, a devout Muslim, and an inspiration to millions. Ali died Friday at age 74. CBS News Special Report, I'm Heather Bosch.
KCMO weather from KCTV 5.
Good Sunday morning, everybody. Mostly sunny skies all day. A gorgeous afternoon. A high of 79 degrees today. Get out and enjoy that. 60 degrees, your overnight low, and then a very small chance for a shower or storm late Monday. Very warm Monday afternoon with a high of 85. I'm KCTV 5 meteorologist Jesse Hovila.
Carson in the Morning.
Paul Ryan, I don't know him well, but I'm sure I'm going to get along great with him. And if I don't, he's going to have to pay a big price, okay?
We may be witnesses to a biblical prophecy come true, and thus there'll be destruction and darkness come up in creation.
There's nobody, nobody that's going to beat us.
Wow, man! That really put it in perspective for me, the prospect of a Trump presidency. Donald Trump cannot be stopped.
Carson in the Morning.
Godzilla!
Weekday morning, 6 to 10.
Oh, man.
Up next on Wendy's Coffee House, a fascinating follow-up on the Roswell case. The children of Roswell. A few highlights. The daughter of a witness to an alien body who discovered that her phone had been bugged for years. How the U.S. Air Force tried to change the mind of the son of the Roswell intelligence officer in 1995. And what really became of the son of the principal witness who disappeared in 1960. My guest, author Tom Carey. Saturday, 6 a.m. here on KCMO. Or catch it on the podcast download. Follow along on the blog, wendyscoffeehouse.com.
Carson in the Morning.
Let's go to Anna on the line. Anna, welcome to the Carson in the Morning Show.
How are you?
I'm good. You want to play Trump or 12-year-old?
I do.
All right, let's start with this first quote. Trump or 12-year-old? Quote, you can't expect everyone to have the same dedication as you.
Trump.
No, that is a 12-year-old. That's a 12-year-old. Sorry, Anna, thanks for the phone call. That was not Trump. We're going to X that one off.
Ow, already.
I told you it's not easy. Scott, welcome to the Carson in the Morning Show.
Good morning.
Let's do Trump or 12-year-old. Here's the quote. I don't know if this makes me a bad person or whatever, but it's hard for me to get interested in other people's vacations. Trump or 12-year-old?
Trump.
No, that's 12-year-old. That's from Higher Even Whippy Kid.
Including the whatever?
Yeah, including the whatever. Yeah.
Surprise.
Dave on the line. Hello, Dave. You want to play Trump or 12-year-old?
Yes.
Quote, I have never seen a thin person drinking Diet Coke.
12-year-old.
No, that's Donald Trump. Wow.
Carson in the Morning, weekday morning, 6 to 10. Carson in the Morning.
Why more women are letting their husbands cheat? Really? What? I mean, how often does this happen?
Where did you see this? AshleyMadison.com?
No, I did not. You know, if my wife did this, I would be like that animal that's raised in captivity. When they take him out, they lift up the cage, and it just kind of sits there in the cage. That's what happened to me. She'd be like, go cheat this weekend. And I would be. I'd be just like that animal, just cowering. I can't. I've never lived out there. It's been so long.
Carson in the Morning. Weekday morning, 6 to 10.
Kansas City's most stimulating talk, KCMO. Kansas City's most stimulating talk.
Why don't you talk into the microphone? I got a backup mic right here. Check, 1, 2, testing, testing.
KCMO, Kansas City.
Good morning. You've got religion on the line right here on KCMO Talk Radio, 103.7 FM and AM 710. I am not Reverend Emeritus Bob Hill. I am Deacon Jim Levin from Holy Spirit Catholic Church in Overland Park. Bob had to take off, but I'm not alone. I am along with
Imam Bilal Muhammad, Imam Emeritus, Alan Shear Islamic Center, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda. Bill, can you become a Deacon Emeritus?
Someday, I hope. Yes, you can.
Is there such an honorific?
Retired deacon, I think, is just what they refer to. But they do have Bishop Emeritus. We have Archbishop Emeritus.
We got a Pope Emeritus. Pope, that's a rare one, right?
It is a very rare one, for sure. But we are here. I am still working and serving. But even though you are Emeritus, we have Emeriti here in the room. They are. Both of you are still working very hard in spreading your faith and sharing your message with others, aren't you?
Trying to do our best.
All right. Well, we have Charlie on the line.
Do better than that.
That's right. Absolutely. We have Charlie on the line who we had before. He was talking about history. Charlie, what did you want to say? You said your son says that religion is history?
Well, we just don't talk about it. I told him when he thinks it's all fact. We just don't discuss it after that. See, the problem, I'll throw out a few things here since there aren't any other callers, apparently.
Well, we do have another caller, so why don't we go ahead and finish up with you.
It's hard to prove a negative. You can deal with, it's possible something might have happened, but you really need to look at the probability. You need to look at if it's part of tradition, habit, inspired writings, that's all in religion, you see, but not dealing with reality or fact all the time. You have to look at analytically what is probable that happened. Otherwise, you're at sea. You don't know what's true and what's not true. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. And I think that we're all kind of hardwired to seek the truth, and I think that religion has proposed what they believe is the truth, and that's what you do, is that you find something that that you believe to be true and you follow it to the best of your ability. But you know, as we heard from a caller before, some feel that there is a truth that everybody must follow or perish. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think that there are streams of truth in many, many religions, many faiths, and, I don't think that we can identify one truth as being the ultimate truth that is exclusive of other truths.
Well, I think it's an idea of proposing as opposed to saying this is the fact. I don't know, not even the Catholic Church has said these are facts about what you are supposed to believe, but this is what the church proposes. When they bring in somebody to the faith, they say, do you profess and believe all that the church has proposed for your good? And, that's what we ask, is that if this is what you believe, then here is where you can find a home. Rabbi?
Bill, is there, what shall we say, a range, even though it might be narrow, of nuances as to how one understands in their own commitment that particular item, affirmation, reflection?
Well, I think that there is this, Pope Benedict called the tyranny of relativism. Mm-hmm. Where everything is the same, everything is at the same level, and it doesn't matter. I don't think.
I'm not suggesting that at all. No, yeah. But the very nuance of the language that you just cited, it would seem to me allows. And I don't want. I'm not talking wiggle room. I'm talking that two Catholics could affirm
the same conviction and still have nuances of how they mean that conviction.
That's right, and that's why there's always dialogue. That's always why there's discussion to kind of help everyone come to an understanding the best that they know how. So, we have another caller. Bebo is on the line, and he wants to talk about Cassius Clay.
Muhammad Ali. Good morning.
Good morning.
I definitely remember him as Cassius Clay. I'm older than he was. I definitely remember and been a boxing fan for many years. I had an uncle here in Kansas. Well, he was in Kansas City, Kansas, that was the Golden Glove boxing coach. And went to school with a guy that was a Golden Gloves boxing champion. I had a cousin who was a Golden Gloves boxing champion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I loved Floyd Patterson. This is going way back when Muhammad Ali knocked him out in 2 or 3 rounds.
This is ancient history for some of our listeners.
Yes. Anyway, I thought, and he was still Cassius Clay at the time. I said, I might start having to pay attention to this guy. I knew he was an Olympic champ, and he wasn't really a big mouth yet. And personally, I liked his big mouth. I was not offended by it. And I just reading in the paper this morning, there's a sports writer in Kansas City, Vahe Gregorian. I read him and Sam Mellinger religiously, whatever they're writing about. And there's an article on the front page of the paper, a lengthy article about Ali by Vahe Gregorian. And in there, Joyce Carol Oates, the author, wrote in Sports Century America that ESPN put on the air some years ago. I'm not aware of it. I didn't watch it. But in there, she wrote that by the time Muhammad Ali came along, he started hollering, I am the greatest, I am this, and all this and that. And he was, you know, alienating people. He said, you have to remember, people were still thinking of Jackie Robinson and some of the early black baseball players that, you know, remained quiet. They took the people who yelled the N-word at them, and they took it, you know, and said, don't make waves. And the way she put it, and boy, I understood it completely. Hey, we're giving you a privilege here, not a right. And I thought, wow, that is very true. You have a privilege that we're allowing you to play baseball, so don't rock the boat. It's not your right. And Muhammad Ali knew that stuff, and he went in the face of that stuff. I never thought of it from that angle until I read that thing in the paper this morning. And I told Judy, I said, I know exactly what she's saying. Or put this thing, because I've heard that myself off and on for all the years. And I knew exactly where it was coming from, and I just admired him even more. I've always liked the guy. I've sat and argued with people about him when he didn't go to Vietnam. And they said, well, all he had to do was box and put on tournaments and go around, and he was too stupid to know that. I said, no, he was too rooted in his convictions. He went to prison instead of just going around and putting on boxing exhibitions in Vietnam. He paid the price. He went to penitentiary, and of course they released. He didn't go to the penitentiary. They ended up putting him on probation and stripped him of his boxing title and wouldn't let him fight for several years. And then he came back. So I've always admired and respected the man. And God bless him. Oh, and then he went, okay, Bilal, I don't know you. I've met a couple of the other fellows, but welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
When he decided that he was going to be Muhammad Ali rather than Cassius Clay, he says, I'm going to get rid of my slave name. You know, again, big uproar. I respected him for it.
So if you were in the room today, you would call him Muhammad Ali?
Absolutely, yeah. I just saw a little clip on television yesterday when Howard Cosell asked him when Muhammad Ali turned 50. And he was talking with Howard Cosell, and he said, champ, you are Muhammad Ali. And I felt that way all along anyway. Yeah. So I respect and admire the man. God bless him.
Thank you, Bebo. Thank you for calling. And that brings us up now to another break. You are listening to Religion on the Line here on KCMO. We'll be right back.
Progressive brings you Flowetry with Flo.
A tool called Name Your Price. Get a grip on your spending like an industrial vice. It's nice. Beats rolling the dice. I prefer brown rice. Don't carry dumbbells when you walk on thin ice. Splash.
Get insurance based on your budget with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know you're not sleeping enough, but what can you do? More sleeping pills? Not look at your phone in bed? Let's be honest. Why don't you do something easy to get the good night's sleep you've been missing, like getting a fresh set of sheets from Boll & Branch. Hi, I'm Scott Tannen. My wife and I founded Boll & Branch to make the most comfortable sheets you'll ever sleep on.
Luxury sheets can cost $1,000 in the store, but ours don't. They're only a couple hundred bucks because we've cut out the 800% retail markup by only selling directly to you online at BollandBranch.com.
Everyone who tries Boll & Branch sheets loves them. Even three U.S. presidents sleep on Boll & Branch. Shipping is free and you can try them for 30 nights.
And if you don't love them, we'll give you a refund. No questions asked.
At Boll & Branch, summer is about having fun. Check out our beach towels, limited edition throw blankets made lighter and brighter for summer, and our classic sheets. Go to BollandBranch.com today for 20% off your entire order when you use promo code SLEEP. That's 20% off right now at BollandBranch.com. Promo code SLEEP, spelled B-O-L-L and branch.com. Promo code SLEEP.
Carson in the Morning.
I think there are some people in the country who would not vote for two women. I'm not kidding. I think there are some people who would not vote for two women. It's like, because think about this. When you get on an airline and you see some people, when they see a female pilot, they kind of go, oh, because it's different. Maybe not because you don't think they're incapable, but it gives you pause. I'm like, fine, you know, she can fly the thing, you know. She certainly probably could give the co-pilot a honey-do list during the flight. I mean, God knows the woman in my life does that for me, so she's very good at that. She'll make him do all the work, and she'll complain about it, that you don't do enough. This cockpit is a mess. I mean, God, you never do anything around here. Can you just clean up around here every once in a while? Trying to fly a plane here. What?
You're working out some issues on the air.
What?
Yeah.
What did I just say?
You just went in like a fugue state where you started basically, what? Yeah. Your wife could be listening, is what I'm saying. I just don't want to make sure you're...
It's like when you're driving and you space off, you don't remember the last 10 miles. I don't remember the last 60 seconds. What happened?
It's okay. Don't worry
what
about it.
What the hell? What did I do?
Carson in the Morning. Weekday morning, 6 to 10. Carson in the Morning.
A streetcar staffer noticed smoke coming from the ground near a construction site on Main and 20th Street. The poles holding up overhead wires that power the streetcar are also right next to the construction, and they touched the pole, and it was a little warm to the touch. That happened to my first-generation iPod. Not kidding. Had it plugged in on the floor, and it literally melted the carpet under the first-generation iPod.
Really?
Yeah.
My laptop gets very hot, actually. I noticed that. I was watching a TV show on it the other day, mm-hmm. and I had it sitting on my belly,
yeah.
and I didn't have a shirt on. Late at night.
Yeah.
Watching something before
bed. Sure, you didn't have it on your lap?
No, I didn't.
It's a laptop, man.
It was on my belly because I was in a laying position, and I was watching. And I realized as I tell the story on the radio that it sounds like I was looking at something lewd and lascivious. I was not.
Freeze up your hands.
I was watching a rerun of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Thank you very much.
Carson in the Morning, weekday morning 6 to 10. Carson in the Morning.
There's always people knocking Tinder.
Because they're saying there's a rise in STDs that could be associated with Tinder usage.
I'm not immediately wielding my rod at these women. It's an app for meeting people.
Basically a thumbs up or thumbs down immediately as you look at your phone.
And if they thumbs you up, if you thumbs the
if
girl
they
up.
Thumbs you up.
It's not even thumbs you up. You screw me up. I think it's a heart icon. I don't know. I haven't used it
if
in forever.
If they thumbs you up, you in.
You hit the little green icon, or you swipe the right direction, and it'll say that you like them. And if they like you, you
can you tell when
you
been
talk.
Can you tell when you've been wiped to the left?
No,
when they rejected you?
No,
that would suck. That would be terrible.
It is sad when you see a girl and you're like, oh my God, this is my dream girl. We share all the same interests. She's beautiful. I would love to take her out and buy her a cup of coffee.
Yes.
And then you swipe right and then nothing. Like it's not a match.
Yeah.
That's when you know, oh, she probably saw my profile and said, uh-uh.
No.
This guy says he works in radio. That guy must be a loser.
Carson in the Morning. Weekday morning 6 to 10. Traffic and weather together first on the Fours and Kansas City's most stimulating talk all day. KCMO Kansas City.
Good morning. You have religion on the line. I'm Deacon Jim Lavin from Holy Spirit Catholic Church in Overland Park. And you're listening to Religion on the Line on 710 AM, KCMO, and 103.7 FM. Glad to have you along. I am along with
Imam Bilal Muhammad, Imam Emeritus, Alan Shear Islamic Center, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda. Bill, when you signed on for the show today, did you think you'd have to man the board?
No, I did not. by the way, I am filling in for Bill Scholes today, who is on retreat getting ready for his installation as acolyte before he becomes ordained as deacon. And wish him well and thank him for allowing me to fill in. Yeah, I used to
All right, so tell us what acolyte means.
Acolyte is the little minor order that's given to even the priests who are in seminary, their final minor order before they become deacon. It gets them more in responsible at the liturgies in serving the Mass and in closer relationship to the church. The actual term, I remember looking it up once when I was installed as acolyte, and I'm drawing a blank right now. But
well, I assume it's a follower, devoted beginner.
Yes.
But I was just intrigued in terms of its use in the progress of a person's development into a position of an official position within the Catholic community.
Right, and they will have some authority to help serve at the altar and purifying the vessels after Mass and a few other things as well. They're a candidate, and then they're installed as lector, and then they're installed as acolyte. Now, you know, the lectors that we have at most Masses are laity, and they're not officially installed as lector, but this is a special installment from the bishop. It just draws them closer into being relationship with the church as they grow closer to holy orders. And he will be installed as acolyte a week from Thursday. No, wait a minute. Is it this Thursday? I think I kept saying a week from Thursday, but that was before this past Thursday. So it's coming up very soon for him.
Somewhere in there. Oh, well.
Yeah. But, you know, going back to your original question, I used to work in public radio for many years, but that was back pre-digital years. I was a classical music host as well as news. And we did everything ourselves from running the board to... Well, we just did everything. We didn't have a producer, and
so welcome home.
Well, yeah. I'm just glad I didn't knock anybody off the air. I hadn't done talk shows like this, we got our two callers on the air during this last segment. You know, we've been talking a lot about Muhammad Ali, and I just have to say, in my experience, I always thought of him as entertaining, and I love watching him fight. And I didn't really get into the hype, but I really didn't quite comprehend how much he meant to everybody across the world until I was watching the Olympics and he lit the torch. Mm-hmm. And just to hear people
talk about the Atlanta Olympics you're referring to.
Yes, the Olympic torch. And what was that, 12 years ago or so? 12 or 16 years ago?
1996.
Right. 20 years ago. And just to hear the reaction and what people had to say about him from then and since then has just really fascinated me, and it's coming back to me again at his passing. People are recalling what he meant to them, and it's such a strong emotional response that I guess I don't want to say I didn't share, but I just didn't understand it to the degree that it extended across people of all countries, people of all faiths, and it's kind of warming to see that. And I hate to have the guy have to pass in order for us to appreciate him. You know, that's what we do a lot when somebody passes. Yeah.
I think one of the things we appreciated about him was that he used his fame as a platform to speak to issues that you know, he thought were necessary. And we didn't have that in sports. We haven't had that in sports of sports figures since that time. And we've needed it.
We've had Hollywood people do that, but not sports figures, like you said. And somehow I think his was genuine and sincere, and I think that's why people latched onto it so much.
I agree, yes.
One of the interesting things of this extraordinary man, amazing life, a small footnote, happened to be on the internet over the break, a story of how Ali saved a suicidal man. On January day in 1981, legendary boxer spoke to a man standing on the ledge of a building for 20 minutes. I mean, whoever knew about that?
Right, yeah.
As I recall, he once publicly stated a deep regret. Since Malcolm X was clearly a critical force in his life in bringing him into the Nation of Islam and then ultimately into a full embrace of Islam. And they cross paths in Africa somewhere.
Yes.
And this was at a time when Malcolm was shunned, banned, removed, expelled from the Nation of Islam because he had seen another notion of the openness of Islam, and Ali shunned him.
Yes.
And I recall Ali wishing only he could go back to that moment.
Yes. Yeah, we were talking about that during the break, actually, and that is one regret that I've heard that too, that he really regrets that he didn't give Malcolm the time that Malcolm wanted to speak with him when they met in Africa.
And they ultimately ended in a similar place in terms of an open embrace of Islam as opposed to a black nationalist community under the banner of Islam. Is that a fair distinction, you think?
That is true. That is absolutely true. And it's such a beautiful journey that both of them had, actually, to come from that place where Nation of Islam began to a place that embraced the whole of humanity through the religion. Beautiful, beautiful story of his life, really, is that how he evolved into the human being that he became, coming from a place where he was separatist-minded also.
And I would certainly add that even though we are clearly not free, no matter what somebody thinks, from racism and its terrible legacies and impacts on all of us, he certainly moved, probably significantly as a giant, moved that bar much further to an embrace of all, just by the force of his personality.
Yes, he did. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. He really, really was an example of the kind of human being that Islam seeks to promote, and I'm sure Judaism and Christianity and all of the people of faith. He exemplifies that embrace, I think, that is necessary for us as humans to really enjoy the richness of human life.
Seems like we need a Muhammad Ali, not only again in Islam, but someone of that stature and that openness and that ecumenical spirit, really, as we say, in each of our faiths, that reach out and speak beyond the differences and look for our commonalities, love.
You know, I think the closest we have to it at the moment is Pope Francis, but I also hear that music.
I agree.
Yeah, I hear it too. So you've been listening to Religion on the Line. Want to thank Bilal. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, you are. Thank you.
Bilal, thank you. Imam Bilal, and Rabbi Mike, and Reverend Emeritus Bill, or Bob, who has left us for the day.
Carson in the morning.
A streetcar staffer noticed smoke coming from the ground near a construction site on Main and 20th Street. The poles holding up overhead wires that power the streetcar are also right next to the construction, and they touched the pole, and it was a little warm to the touch. That happened to my first-generation iPod. Not kidding. Had it plugged in on the floor, and it literally melted the carpet under the first-generation iPod.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My laptop gets very hot, actually. I noticed that. I was watching a TV show on it the other day, mm-hmm. and I had it sitting on my belly,
yeah.
and I didn't have a shirt on. Late at night.
Yeah.
Watching something before
sure
bed.
You didn't have it on your lap?
No, I didn't.
It's a laptop, man.
I was, no. It was on my belly because I was in a laying position. And I was watching. And I realized as I tell the story on the radio that it sewns like I was looking at something lewd and lascivious. I was not.
Freeze up your hands.
I was watching a rerun of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Thank you very much.
Carson in the Morning, weekday morning 6 to 10. FM, 103.7 and AM 710. 101.1 KCFX HD2, Kansas City's most stimulating talk, KCMO.